Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading the MRT for Friday, March 31st, 2023. Midland Health appoints new president CEO. Midland Health has appointed Stephen Bowerman as president and chief executive officer. Bowerman fills the vacancy left by Russell Myers as he transitions to a developmental role for the Midland Memorial Foundation, focusing on the completion of the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center and other developmental projects. The board is grateful for the 20 years of service Mr. Myers has dedicated to Midland Health and our community, said Devin Alsup, chairperson of the Board of Trustees. Steve Bowerman is well prepared to advance the mission of leading healthcare for Greater Midland. Bowerman joined Midland Health in 2009 as vice president and chief financial officer. His most recent role was president and chief operating officer. Bowerman has 24 years of experience in healthcare and is a native West Texan, born and raised in Kermit. He attended West Texas A&M University, graduating with a bachelor's degree in business administration in 1999. Bowerman received his master's degree in business administration from Texas Tech University in 2012. I am thrilled to have the opportunity to continue to work alongside the great staff and physicians of Midland Health, said Bowerman. This is home for me, and I will continue to lead this organization towards advancing healthcare in Midland. With tremendous community support and engaged board, Midland Health is a special organization, and I'm humbled to serve as the president and chief executive officer. Bowerman and his wife of 21 years, Monica, moved to Midland in 1999, beginning his career at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. In 2006, he joined Odessa Regional Medical Hospital and assisted in the acquisition and consolidation of Alliance Hospital to form what is now Odessa Regional Medical Center. Stephen and Monica have two children. Dylan is a freshman at Texas Tech University, and Jack is a freshman at Legacy Freshman High School. New hotel to transform downtown building. Tapestry Hotel by Hilton expected to open in the next 3 years with 93 rooms, hyper-local product by Ben Schaefer. The Tapestry Hotel by Hilton is slated to come to 112 South Lorraine Street in downtown Midland in the next 2 or 3 years and will benefit the local community. According to a press conference Thursday, the proposed 93-room boutique hotel will be presented to the Midland City Council in the next couple months, according to a fact sheet provided by Al Escamilla of Escamilla Media Group. The hotel still needs to receive approval and proper permits from the city. The property owner of the proposed hotel is L.S. Brentway, LLC, a local family with more than 25 years business experience in West Texas, according to the fact sheet. The hotel would provide travelers with an original, locally curated, and vibrant hotel experience, plus an upscale restaurant. Escamilla explained the hyper-local aspect of Tapestry Hotels by Hilton. Aside from a true-to-Midland regional interior design, the Tapestry can incorporate local businesses. If the Tapestry is looking for a coffee shop and they want to partner with someone local, then they can go to a local vendor or coffee owner and say, "We want you to be a part of our new concept," Escamilla gave as an example. The food served in Tapestry's restaurant will be locally sourced, potentially from a meat market or vendor around Midland, according to Escamilla. In addition to providing visitors and locals with a place to stay, the Tapestry will create jobs at all pay scales, Escamilla added. Funding for the hotel is already in place, Escamilla said. The business will revitalize an older building in Midland and increase the tax base. Escamilla stated taxes will range from approximately $200,000 to $300,000 in taxes to MISD every year to $20,000 to $30,000 to the Midland Hospital District. The building at 112 South Lorraine was built in 1927, originally as a hospital, the fact sheet states, and was the first high-rise in West Texas. how the indoor athletic complex concept came to be. Dedicated Dads Come Together to Create Midland Athletic Syndicate by Stuart Doreen. For years, Midlanders have talked about the lack of an indoor athletic facility. Many parents and families have commented about having to hit the West Texas roads to travel to Lubbock, Abilene, and the Metroplex for tournaments and competitive events. They have asked privately and publicly, why can't Midland have an indoor facility that is comparable to facilities like the dual stadium facility at the Scarborough Sports Complex, the Bush Tennis Center, the swimming and diving facilities at COM Aquatics, or the golfing facilities around Midland? After a recent trip to Abilene, some dads finally said enough is enough. The creation of the Midland Athletic Syndicate, a nonprofit organization, is expected to fill a void in the community's athletic facility arsenal. Their plan is simple: build a 103,000-square-foot facility that houses 6 full-size basketball courts, 12 volleyball courts, and an indoor soccer space. They believe that when completed, the indoor athletic facility will cost up to $30 million, and the syndicate anticipates the money will be raised privately. This is something that a lot of Midland people have been wanting for a long time, said John Scarborough. We hear it all the time in our circles. It's going to be a home run, it's going to stand out, and Midland is going to benefit. A conversation among dads became even more serious after a trip to Abilene's Dodge Jones facility. The Abilene facility is home to 4 basketball, 8 volleyball courts. In Lubbock, there is the Apex Event Center with 60,000 square feet and space for 8 basketball, volleyball courts. A look at their respective websites shows basketball tournaments booked in April and May, and league opportunities for people in their respective markets. The Midland Athletic Syndicate already has an arrangement with the City of Midland. The Midland City Council on Tuesday approved a land lease with the syndicate to plan its facility in the northeast corner of the Scarborough Sports Complex. Syndicate officials are excited about the partnership because of the parking space at the complex and the proximity to hotels in West Midland. During tournament weekends, we're going to fill those hotels, said Austin Campbell. Not that they're having a hard time getting occupied now, but they're going to be very, very busy. Campbell said a regional facility will add opportunities for visitors that will generate business for restaurants and hotels and add to the city's sales tax and hotel motel tax coffers. We think it's going to bring big things, Campbell said. The City of Midland, in its recent retreat, has stated an indoor athletic complex and the opportunities that it brings was a goal for the council. Mayor Lori Blong told the Reporter Telegram about playing basketball during her youth in Midland and not having adequate courts then. Now, we certainly are in the position where we can bring in teams regionally. Smaller communities around us are going to be able to come in and use our facilities, Blong said. So we're thankful for this Midland Athletic Syndicate and their willingness to be visionary and lead forward with this project. In terms of non-tournament or non-league activities, Campbell said the facility will be open for those wanting to play pickup basketball or volleyball as long as courts are not being rented. He said the Dodge Jones in Abilene offers spring break and summer camps, and he envisions similar programs in Midland. While there might be a small fee for camps, a person just wanting to shoot hoops or participate in pickup games wouldn't need to worry about a fee. We want people in there and using it, Campbell said. Scarborough added, I think everybody's going to benefit from this thing. Midland deserves to have these kinds of things, and it's just kind of the start, we think, with the investing in our youth. Gas prices jumped 17 cents in Midland this week by Ben Schaefer. Gas prices across the state increased dramatically this week because of rising crude oil prices and the switch over to more expensive summer blend gasoline, according to AAA Texas. Although Midland, $3.25, remains with 10 cents of the state average, $3.16. Midland experienced a 17-cent gas price increase this week, according to AAA Texas. The state average jumped by 10 cents. AAA Texas reported greater weekly increases in Abilene, Odessa, and El Paso compared to Midland. Prices included $3.30 in Abilene, a 30-cent increase, $3.23 in Odessa, a 22-cent increase, and $3.45 in El Paso, a 21-cent increase. The price also increased 22 cents in Odessa this week. AAA Texas reports the price in Odessa is still 2 cents less than the average in Midland. Lubbock and San Angelo were two Texas cities impacted the least this week, experiencing a 7 and 1 cent increases, respectively. Lubbock, $2.97, is home to the least expensive gas price of the 27 largest Texas metro areas AAA surveys. The $2.98 average in San Angelo is the third lowest. Texas's gas price average is the ninth lowest nationwide after many weeks as either the lowest or among the lowest five states. Midland has become a mainstay among the most expensive averages statewide, this week ranking as the fourth highest. El Paso is the most expensive and Abilene is second highest, according to AAA Texas. Still, the average in Midland this week is 72 cents less than 1 year ago at $3.97. The statewide average is 70 cents less. A AAA Texas reported that even with economic fears still front and center for many in the oil and gas industry, the outlook for fuel demand remains strong along with crude oil supply disruptions from Kurdistan oil exports. Plus, for many, spring break travel is underway and the summer travel season is just around the corner. According to the Energy Information Administration, fuel demand is back above 9 million barrels per day, which is usually seen during the busy summer travel months, AAA Texas reported.
Hello, this is Michael. Continuing, the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Friday, March 31st, 2023. Midland Animal Services launches volunteer program, Rescue Runners, by Mercedes Cordero. The City of Midland Animal Services is launching a new program that will allow volunteers to walk or run with shelter dogs. Rescue Runners is designed for dogs to showcase their personality outside the kennel, exercise, improvement in social skills, helping to promote fostering and adoptions, according to the city. Rescue Runners volunteers will meet at the Animal Services facility located at 1200 North Fairgrounds Road on the first and third Saturdays of each month, beginning this Saturday. Volunteer check-in will be between 8 and 10 a.m. Walk-run dogs will be until 1:30 p.m., according to the city. All volunteers must register and view the runner's guidelines video at Animal Services before their initial outing. Volunteers 15 years or younger must be accompanied by a guardian at all times. Appointments are not required, but volunteers may reserve a spot. Contact Midland Animal Services for questions at 432-685-7420. For more information or to access the waiver, visit MidlandTexas.gov/1095/rescue-runners. Obituaries, published March 31st. Edward Sinastic, October 4th, 1925 to March 28th, 2023. Edward Gerhard Sinastic of Plano, Texas, passed away on March 28th at the age of 97. He was born on October 4th, 1925 to Gerland Paul and Annie Emma Loki Sinastic in Midland, Texas. Edward attended Midland High School. He is survived by his daughter, Linda Patrick of Plano, several nieces and nephews, Martin Sinochnik and wife Kathy, Bruce Sinochnik and wife Deborah, Kenny Sinochnik and wife Lynn, Sarah Johnson and husband David, Jana Sinochnik and husband Mike Blaker, Joni Sinochnik and Marguerite Capella, Robert Capella and wife Marla, Martha Burnett and husband Kevin, Mary Capella, Brooke Tuggle, and a host of other loving family and friends. Edward was preceded in death by his parents and wife and siblings. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, April 3rd at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland, Texas. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 15th at Messiah Lutheran Church in Plano. In lieu of flowers, please make memorial donations to Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri at www.csl.edu/support. To convey condolences and to sign an online registry, please visit tjmfuneral.com. Letha Prescott Martinez, November 14, 1956 to March 24, 2023. Letha Ann Prescott Martinez of Midland went to her heavenly home on March 24, 2023 after a battle with cancer. Letha was born November 14, 1956 in Sweetwater, Texas. She is survived by Frank J. Martinez, husband of 33 years, stepdaughter Leslie Cheshire and husband Jason, and children Haley, Caleb, Kylie, and Dylan of Argyle, Texas. Parents Delma G. Cotton Prescott and Lelda P. Polly Rains of Prescott. Sister Linda Melson and husband Michael, and family of Midland. Two brothers, Eric Lynn and Mark Fuqua, and family, and many special aunts, uncles, and cousins. She will be missed by all her family and friends. No services are scheduled. In lieu of flowers and in thanks for their services, you may donate to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Phone 432-682-2855. Ted C. Fowler. Ted Fowler, 86, of Esteline, Texas, passed away peacefully on Tuesday, March 28. He was born on May 1, 1936, in Esteline, Texas, to the late Lloyd and Edith Fowler. Ted was preceded in death by his two brothers, Duty and Kent Fowler, and sister Joe Hickey of Amarillo. He is survived by his oldest brother, Gail Fowler, also of Amarillo. He is survived by his loving wife, Sylvia Fowler of Crane, who he was married to for 62 years, and daughter Julie Smith and grandson Cooper Smith of Scottsdale, Arizona. The family will receive guests on Friday, March 31st at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., and a funeral service will be held at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel on Saturday, April 1st at 4 p.m. May you rest in peace, knowing that to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. You will always be remembered and forever loved. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. John Robert Ward III, Tuffy. On March 31st, God opened the gates and greeted a strawberry blonde, hazel-eyed, rambunctious, yet perfect little man named Tuffy, who was without a doubt tough. John Robert Ward III, Tuffy, was born as a completion to the family of John Robert Ward II and Amanda Ward in Odessa, Texas, on August 11th, 2020. A funeral will be held Monday, April 3rd, at American Heritage Cemetery and Funeral Home, located at 4100 North FM 1788, Midland, Texas, 79703. There will be viewing from 10 a.m. through 2 p.m., with the funeral immediately following the viewing. Death notices for Friday, March 31st. John D. Mizzles, Jr. John D. Mizzles, Jr., 68, of Odessa, died Thursday, March 23rd in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Jose Hernandez. Jose H. Hernandez, 71, of Midland, passed away Thursday, March 23rd in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m., April 6th, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Julia Marcellus. Julia Marcellus, 85, of Gardendale, passed away Thursday, March 23rd in Gardendale. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Placido Bernal. Placido Bernal, 65, of Midland, died Sunday, March 26th in Brownwood. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. April 1st at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Sharon Lyons. Sharon Janice Lyons, 86, of Odessa, passed away Friday, March 24th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, March 31st, 2023. Permian Energy Development Lab unveiled. November start planned for ambitious project of Texas-New Mexico Consortium. Introduced Thursday in a UT Energy Week panel discussion at the University of Texas in Austin, an initiative called the Permian Energy Development Lab will address a broad scope of concerns, including the capture of carbon and its beneficial reuse and the management of methane and emissions. A memorandum of understanding was announced Thursday among seven Texas and New Mexico colleges and universities and three national laboratories, with spokesman Brett Holmes saying the laboratory and field research will start in November. Quote, in the short to mid-term, the Permian Energy Development Lab's business model will work exclusively through the internet and be solely focused on the Permian Basin, end quote, Holmes said Tuesday. Quote, all field work will take place in the Permian, and any future physical facilities related to the PEDL will be located in the Permian. Quote, the lab will foster collaboration from various scientific fields and leaders across business, government, and academic institutions. Its objectives are to conduct advanced energy research, strengthen the regional and U.S. economies, and support energy-intensive communities and the natural resources they depend on. The initiative will ensure that the benefits of the transition to an advanced energy economy are equitably distributed and that workforce and educational opportunities are designed for the next generation of energy professionals, end quote. Holmes said the project was initiated by the Austin-based Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation. The late George Mitchell's having been a Galveston geologist and Mitchell Energy and Development Corp. founder, who proved in 1997 that fracking could be used commercially to free natural gas from shale. Holmes said the project was initiated by the Austin-based Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation. Industry analyst historian Daniel Yergin called Mitchell's fracking technique, quote, the most important and biggest energy innovation of this century, end quote. And it has led to the reinvigoration of the global oil and gas industry. Holmes said the CGMF established the Mitchell Innovation Lab in 2020. Quote, to focus on emerging issues and develop a portfolio of breakthrough sustainability ideas and opportunity areas to develop, seed, and incubate, end quote. quote, the PEDL is its first initiative, end quote, he said. Mary Lou Hastings, the CGMF's executive vice president and director of the Mitchell Lab, said Wednesday from Austin that the planning stage for the Permian Lab began over 2 years ago, and that related expenditures through this year will run as high as $7 million. Quote, tomorrow will be the announcement of the project, and the formal launch will be around November 1st, end quote, Hastings said. Quote, the partners have been working very hard for the past year to 18 months on planning and design, end quote. Asked if the Basin Laboratory was an ambition of Mitchell's before he died in 2013 at age 94, Hastings said, quote, no, but I believe he would be excited. I worked with Mr. Mitchell for a long time, 13 years with the company, till moving over to the foundation 15 years ago. The lab is inspired by him and informed by the science and research he funded, end quote. She said a physical laboratory might be constructed at some point, but the emphasis will be, quote, more on innovative work done in innovative ways that maximize the benefit and potential of the Permian Basin. We may be able to move away from bricks and mortar with high overhead and put more resources into the actual work, end quote, said Hastings, a Midland Lee High School graduate who earned a bachelor's degree in economics and political science at Duke University and master's in business and public policy at UT Austin. Other goals of the project are to address carbon accounting and certifications, the circular economy of energy technologies and materials, renewable power storage and integration, subsurface energy and long-term storage, low-carbon fuels, chemicals and energy carriers, energy systems infrastructure, and water resource use, treatment, and conservation. The lab will also work on environmental monitoring and geographic information systems, regenerative agriculture, and land restoration and conservation. The Memorandum of Understanding is among UT Austin, UTPB in Odessa, New Mexico Tech in Socorro, Odessa College, Midland College, National Technology and Engineering Solutions of Sandia in Albuquerque, UT El Paso, New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, the Houston Advanced Research Center, and the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in Golden, Colorado. Crockett to become Ivy Campus. By the 2024-25 school year, Crockett Middle School will offer a middle-year international baccalaureate program. The announcement was made at the March 28th board meeting and expanded on during Superintendent Scott Murray's media call Wednesday. The groundwork, including planning and training, will start in the 2023-24 school year, and it will open for students in 2024-25. In picking Crockett, Murray said they had a team of people who did, quote, quite a bit of analysis, end quote. Odessa High School is currently the only IB program in the district. Quote, it needed to be a middle school functioning in a healthy manner. MYP is not a turnaround opportunity. It needed to be a middle school in good standing. It needed to be a middle school that feeds the International Baccalaureate at OHS. Just the feeder pattern eliminated quite a few schools from consideration, end quote, Murray said. Quote, we needed a school that feeds into the program at Odessa High School, end quote, he added. Noe Ortiz was announced as the principal of Crockett Middle School March 28th. He was principal at Ireland Elementary and will finish out the year there. Maribel Aranda, principal at Crockett, will also finish out the year, and next year will become the director of administrative services. Murray said Ortiz was very interested in leading the IB journey at Crockett. The program will be open to all students in the district and all those who attend Crockett. The IB numbers at OHS are not as large as they could be because there was no feeder program. Quote, this will be the first time we have a feeder program for that. In fact, we will also be announcing the name of an elementary school that is going to be the PYP, or Primary Years Program, that will feed the middle school and feed the high school, end quote, Murray said. Quote, it will become a choice opportunity. Our students that are zoned for Crockett will have the choice to remain in that school. Students from around the community, every student in Ector County, will have a choice to attend Crockett Middle School or not, and make that their option. All students in Crockett will be part of the MYP program, end quote, he added. The middle school and elementary school IB programs are school-wide, Murray said. Pre-kindergarten registration starts April 1st for any new pre-K student age of 3 or 4 that is interested in entering pre-K for the 23-24 school year. Quote, we're excited that the YMCA is expanding their capacity. We will have the ability to accept more 3-year-olds next year, so any and every 3-year-old that is interested in our half-day 3-year-old program will have that opportunity, In addition to that, the YMCA also offers an opportunity for pre-K families to have an extended day opportunity, so the YMCA is a really good choice for families that have three-year-old children. We'd love to break the 2,000 student level for next year, end quote, Marie said. You can register online or visit any ECISD school to get more information about pre-kindergarten registration. A holiday was added to the school calendar next year as a holiday was left out. The one added was October 9th, Columbus Day / Indigenous Peoples Day. Easter brunch at Midland's longest table. Midland, Thriving United has announced the second annual community-wide Easter service and brunch. Easter brunch at Midland's longest table is an event where the community comes together in friendship and fellowship to dine at Midland's longest table. Quote, hosting the second free Easter service and brunch is truly exciting. Whereas last year we fed and worshiped with 750 people in downtown Midland. This year we will exceed 1,000. Every person of any age or walk of life is invited to break bread with their friends and neighbors to celebrate the joy of the season, end quote. Executive Director Coleman Nelson said in a news release. This year's event will include a special appearance by Chad Mattson of the chart-topping Christian music band Unspoken. Mattson will share his testimony and join the Transform Band in an uplifting musical worship service. David McReynolds, a pastor, church-wide operations at Stonegate, will open with an Easter message. The event will be followed by one of the largest Easter egg hunts in Midland. Easter brunch at Midland's longest table will be held April 9th at the Midland County Horseshoe Pavilion. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. Service begins at 1 p.m. This free brunch, Easter service, and Easter egg hunt are brought to you by Thriving United and a host of community partners, including Porter's Grocery, who provided all of the food, MPLX, and Southwest Specialty. Your free event tickets are available at thrivingunited.org. LHS to host cook-off. The Legacy High School barbecue teams are set to host the Best of the West Smoke-Off Saturday at Legacy High School, 3500 Neely Avenue. Winners in each category and overall will qualify to compete at the state competition in May. The best dishes will be determined via closed blind judging. Awards will be given in the auditorium. Visiting competitors include high school students from Grady, Rankin, Stanton, and James Madison, San Antonio. This National High School BBQ Association event is open to the public. It is presented by LHS FFA. 9 a.m. preparation begins, 10 a.m. light fires, 1 p.m. Dutch oven, 2 p.m. pork chop, 3 p.m. skirt steak taco, 4 p.m. half chicken, 5 p.m. St. Louis ribs, 6 p.m. awards. Odessan sentenced in guns case. A 45-year-old Odessa woman was sentenced to 18 months in federal prison Wednesday for purchasing several guns for her boyfriend, a Mexican national, who was legally prohibited from purchasing the guns himself because of his immigration status. According to a news release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Delma Vitella purchased at least six guns from December 2020 through March 2022 from various stores in Midland and Odessa, signing forms falsely stating she was the intended buyer. Vitella's boyfriend was stopped by law enforcement officers in Laredo as he was attempting to cross into Mexico, and he had two of the guns Vitella had purchased on his behalf, the news release stated. Vitella pleaded guilty to providing false statements during the purchase of firearms in December and was sentenced Wednesday. Quote, straw purchasing is not an act of love. It is an act that fuels violence across our country and our neighbors, end quote, said Special Agent in Charge Jeffrey C. Boschek II for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, Dallas Field Division. Quote, ATF and our partners in the Permian Basin are steadfast in our fight to keep firearms out of the hands of those that shouldn't have them. Ms. Vitella thought she was being a good girlfriend when she was actually helping to arm vicious Mexican drug cartels. I hope that others don't make this same mistake, end quote. According to U.S. District Court records, Vitella purchased a 9mm Beretta, a Henry repeating rifle, two 22 caliber revolvers, a 40 caliber pistol, and a 9mm pistol. Last week, a federal jury in Pecos convicted an Oklahoma man in an unrelated case of illegally smuggling a firearm, body armor, and ammunition into Mexico. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Jesus Soto Pera, 31, drove into Mexico in December 2022 and was turned back by Mexican authorities because of vehicle registration issues. The items were found in his vehicle by Customs and Border Protection officers at the Presidio Port of Entry. Midland Health appoints Bowerman President, CEO. Midland Health has appointed Stephen Bowerman as President and Chief Executive Officer. Bowerman fills the vacancy left by Russell Myers as he transitions to a developmental role for the Midland Memorial Foundation, focusing on completion of the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center and other developmental projects. Quote, the board is grateful for the 20 years of service Mr. Myers has dedicated to Midland Health and our community, end quote. Devin Alsup, chairperson of the Board of Trustees, said in a news release. Quote, Steve Bowerman is well prepared to advance the mission of leading healthcare for Greater Midland, end quote. Bowerman joined Midland Health in 2009 as Vice President, Chief Financial Officer. His most recent role was President and Chief Operating Officer. He has 24 years of experience in healthcare and is a native West Texan, born and raised in Kermit. He attended West Texas A&M University, graduating with a bachelor's degree in business administration in 1999. He received his master's degree in business administration from Texas Tech University in 2012. Quote, I am thrilled to have the opportunity to continue to work alongside the great staff and physicians of Midland Health, end quote, Powerman said in the release. Quote, this is home for me, and I will continue to lead this organization towards advancing healthcare in Midland. With tremendous community support and an engaged board, Midland Health is a special organization, and I'm humbled to serve as the president and chief executive officer, end quote. Bowerman and his wife of 21 years, Monica, moved to Midland in 1999, beginning his career at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. In 2006, he joined Odessa Regional Hospital and assisted in the acquisition and consolidation of Alliance Hospital to form what is now Odessa Regional Medical Center. Stephen and Monica have two children. Dylan is a freshman at Texas Tech University, and Jack is a freshman at Legacy Freshman High School. Three teens accused of organized criminal activity. Three teenagers were arrested late Wednesday night after officers said they tried to rip off undercover officers. According to an Odessa Police Department report, undercover officers discovered someone using the name, quote, Murdode, end quote, on Instagram was selling marijuana, THC, and psychedelic mushrooms, and they arranged to meet that person at a convenience store on South Crane Avenue. The suspect told the undercover officers he'd been driving a maroon-colored car with chrome wheels, and officers saw the car arrive and then leave, the report stated. Officers pulled the car over after noticing its tags had expired in August. Officers saw several nicotine vape pen boxes in the back of the car, and since none of the three occupants were old enough to possess nicotine, they searched the entire vehicle and found four sealed cake vape pens, the report stated. When the officers opened the packaging, they discovered the vape pens had already been used and were empty, the report stated. Quote, all three advised that they were planning on jacking the officers by selling the used vape pens to the undercover officers, end quote, an officer wrote in his report. Levi Bunton, 18, Christian Vigil, 17, and Brian Poulais, 17, were arrested on suspicion of engaging in organized criminal activity. All three remained in the Ector County Jail Thursday afternoon on surety bonds of $2,000 each. Once Upon a December, Broadway musical Anastasia to take the stage at Wagner Noel. This weekend, Broadway returns to the Basin with this month's presentation of Anastasia. The musical, which is based on the 1997 animated film of the same name, adapts the legend of Grand Duchess Anastasia of Russia escaping the execution of her family, the Romanovs. The touring production is a part of this season's Broadway in the Basin and will take place at 7 p.m. April 2nd at Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Playing the lead role of Anastasia, Anya, is recent college graduate Veronica Stern. Stern has been playing the role of Anastasia since August of 2022 and is looking forward to the opportunity to come to the Permian Basin. Quote, we're so excited. We're going through our Texas leg of the tour, end quote, Stern said. Quote, we're happy to be in the warm weather, which always makes for better performances for everybody because you get to spend more time outside and you get to enjoy the beautiful cities in Texas, end quote. The production has made stops in College Station and Orange this week. After it stops in Midland, they will be performing in Amarillo and Dallas before continuing in Kentucky. For Stern, who graduated from the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music in 2021, playing the role of Anastasia has been a huge break for her as this is her first national tour. Quote, it truly is unbelievable, end quote, Stern said. Quote, I'm just getting started in my career, so to be able to do something of this magnitude early, I feel very blessed and very lucky and grateful every single day, end quote. The show transports the audience from the twilight of the Russian Empire to the euphoria of Paris in the 1920s. The plot of the show involves a young amnesiac orphan named Anya, who, years later after escaping, doesn't remember where she came from. She hopes to find some trace of her family by siding with two con men who wish to take advantage of her likeness to the Grand Duchess. Together, they embark on an adventure to help her find home, love, and family, all while being pursued by a ruthless Soviet officer who is determined to silence Anya. Most people might be familiar with the 1997 animated feature, which was created by Don Bluth and Gary Goldman. However, this new version has a few differences. The Broadway version features a book by celebrated playwright Terrence McNally, a lush new score by Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens, based on the original direction by Tony Award winner Darko Trzeciak, with choreography by Peggy Hickey and tour direction by Sarah Hartman. The show opened up on Broadway back in 2017. Quote, "This is the production that's from Broadway," end quote, Stern said. Quote, "Not much has changed. It's the same creative team that's working with us. Audience are really getting the Broadway experience when they come to see our show. If you're a fan of the 1997 film, you'll get even more because they've added more. There's more songs in the Broadway show, but it also contains all your favorites as well," end quote. Those favorites still include Once Upon a December, as well as Journey to the Past, and Paris Holds the Key to Your Heart. One major difference between this version and the 1997 film is the change of villain, as Rasputin has been omitted. Quote, "For fans of the movie, there's a new antagonist whose name is Gleb," end quote, Stern said. Quote, "He sings some beautiful ballads in this show. Anya, she has a song called In My Dreams, which she sings right at the beginning of the show, which is new. Then there's some things sprinkled throughout that has some tunes and melodies that people might recognize but are different," end quote. Playing the role of Gleb is Christian McQueen. The roles of the two con men, Dimitri and Vlad, are played by Willem Butler and Brian Seastrom, respectively. For Stern, her favorite part of this musical is how well-rounded it is. Quote, "It's not just one specific part, but the piece as a whole just really flows well," end quote, Stern said. Quote, "I think you get, as an audience member, the ballads and the songs and the beautiful duets and the funny duets. There's also the big ensemble dance numbers and everything. It's just a well-rounded musical. I don't think anyone walks away saying, I wish they had done this," end quote. One of the musical numbers that stands out the most to fans is Once Upon a December. Quote, "I think Once Upon a December is a beautifully haunting song," end quote, Stern said. Quote, "And I think when people come to see it, they'll see that there are remnants of the animated feature where the ghosts come around, but to be able to see it personified on stage, that's a very different experience. I know that when people come to see the stage musical, they say how much they enjoyed watching Once Upon a December," end quote. Another number Stern enjoys singing is Journey to the Past, which was an Oscar-nominated song from the animated film. Quote, "Getting to sing Journey to the Past every single night is an honor, first of all, because it's this Oscar-nominated song that I get to sing all across the stage," end quote, Stern said. Quote, "It's also a song that everybody's waiting for, as well as Once Upon a December," end quote. However, in this version, Journey to the Past comes right before intermission rather than early on. Quote, "Unlike the movie, it comes at the end of Act 1," end quote, Stern said. Quote, "In the movie, it's at the start. In the musical, she sings it at the end of the first act. It's her first big moment. She's about to get to Paris. She just spends 15 minutes looking at what she's going to do, and when she gets to the end of Act 1, she has a choice to make, and that's her decision," end quote. Stern says the music has been fun to sing, and it's hard to choose which piece is her favorite. With that said, though, she enjoys the duet with Dimitri called In a Crowd of Thousands. Quote, "It's just a quiet, simple, and very intricate song," end quote, Stern said. Quote, "It's all about remembering who you are, but also basking in the what if of it as well. I love singing that," end quote. For more information about the show, go to tinyurl.com/2PMZCT74. PBRC Telethon to take place in April. The Permian Basin Rehab Center's annual telethon is just around the corner. Since 1977, the Rehab Center has hosted the event as a way to raise funds to provide therapy services to patients who need them, regardless of their financial situation. The telethon gives the PBRC the opportunity to share the stories of their patients and thank the donors who make it all possible. This year's telethon will take place on April 15th and 16th and will be live on News West 9. The patient representative this year is Jace Rodriguez, who also had the honor of lighting the community Christmas tree at Optimus Park back in December. For more information on this year's telethon, go to tinyurl.com/3BMPV2EP. Barrientos to be featured once again on the Food Network. Odessa chef Alejandro Barrientos will once again be featured on television. The co-owner of Curbside Bistro will be featured in next week's episode of Chopped on the Food Network. The show will begin at 7 p.m. and will be the first episode of the new season. Chopped is a reality-based cooking game show series that is hosted by Ted Allen. The series pits four chefs against each other as they compete for a chance to win $10,000. The series first debuted back in 2009. This isn't the first time that Barrientos will be featured on a show on the Food Network. 2 years ago, the Odessan was featured in an episode of Beat Bobby Flay. Alejandro co-owns the restaurant with his wife, Stephanie Barrientos. High Sky Wing to offer Aviation Day. Midland. This weekend, the High Sky Wing will be putting on its annual Aviation Fun Day. The event is scheduled for 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at the Commemorative Air Force High Sky Wing Hangar, located at 9600 Wright Drive in Midland. The event is free and open to all ages. Quote, we do this once a year, end quote, wing leader Gina Leinberger said. Quote, it's like an open house to the public. We want the public to come out and see the treasures that we have inside the hangar. But we've also added an educational component to it this year. It's being sponsored by Chevron. Chevron is bringing in some of their pilots to talk about a career in aviation, end quote. Guests will get a chance to experience the sights and sounds of World War II aircraft at the Midland Army Airfield Museum. Visitors will get a chance to see historic aircraft, view a living history encampment, military vehicles, and tour the museum. The event will also include veterans outreach employees as well as Midland College's aviation maintenance program. There will also be Young Eagle flights for children ages 8 to 17 by the EAA Chapter 123. Quote, it'll be first come and first sign up, end quote, Leinberger said. Quote, it's to give kids a first taste of aviation, and hopefully they'll be our next generation of aviation pilots or mechanics or aircraft builders. You never know, end quote. The day will also include food trucks as well as a live reenactment of life during World War II. Quote, we enjoy putting this on each year because we enjoy seeing people who haven't been here before come here and get close to the aircraft and see everything. It's a unique venue that we produce for people, end quote, Leinberger said. Tom Renault has been a volunteer with the High Sky Wing for about 7 years now and enjoys helping out with Aviation Fun Day. Quote, every year we like to do an Aviation Fun Day, end quote, Renault said. Quote, the big thing about it is that it's for the kids. We get to have them come out and they get to see the airplanes. We'll take some flights through the day so they can see the sights. It's pretty cool, end quote. Renault also hopes that this event can inspire the next generation of aviation enthusiasts. Quote, it's a lot of fun, end quote, Renault said. Quote, it's rewarding. Kids get to have a little bit of hands-on time with aviation, and the goal is to pique their interests, if not for aviation, then for the aspects of aviation. Aviation requires math and things like that. I know that I grew up always wanting to fly, so it made me try extra hard in school, end quote. For more information on this year's Aviation Fun Day, go to tinyurl.com/56HD4NJR. UTPB Vocal Ensemble to present Night at the Opera. No, there won't be an actual opera being performed in the sanctuary at First United Methodist Church. However, opera lovers will still have plenty to be excited about as the University of Texas Permian Basin's Vocal Ensemble performs select pieces from famous shows with its Night at the Opera concert. The concert will take place at 7:30 p.m. today at First United Methodist in Odessa. The event is free and open to the public. It will feature music from the opera such as La Bohème, Carmen, Turandot, Rigoletto, and a few pieces from Phantom of the Opera. The director of the UTPB Vocal Ensemble is David Corman, who also serves as the music minister at First United Methodist. Quote, it's a very wide variety of music and some very difficult music, end quote, Corman said. Quote, some of it includes solos such as arias, and there's a quintet and a trio. The quintet is from Carmen. It's one of the hardest pieces of opera. It's a big challenge for the students. It's going to be in Italian, French, and English, end quote. The evening's concert will conclude with the famous Nessun Dorma and Giacomo Puccini's Turandot, being sung by the ensemble. Quote, "That'll be a fun ending piece," end quote, Cornyn said. There will be 16 students singing in the ensemble, all ranging from different majors. Quote, "We have everyone from music majors to business majors and communication majors," end quote, Cornyn said. Quote, "It's not all music majors," end quote. The UTPB Vocal Ensemble has done numerous productions over the last couple of years. Quote, "In December, we did A Christmas Carol, the musical," end quote, Cornyn said. Quote, "Last year, we did Pagliacci. We've also done a lot of children's productions," end quote. Next month, the UTPB Music Department will also be doing Oklahoma, which will also take place at First United Methodist. That production will take place on May 18th, 19th, and 21st. Among the students performing in this week's concert is Perry Gruel, a junior in business management. Gruel will be singing the Cote aria from La Boheme. He will also be singing a piece from Carmen. Quote, "For me, I'm looking forward to this concert," end quote, Gruel said. Quote, "I may be a business major, but my dream is to be a vocal performer, especially in opera. I love acting. This is a great experience," end quote. Brandon Lippert is another student who will be performing Friday. The senior music education major from Smithville will be singing in a duet from La Boheme. Quote, "I'm excited," end quote, Lippert said. Quote, "This is the first time I've ever gotten to do something like this, being an instrumentalist. This is my first time doing any kind of singing in front of an audience," end quote. First Five Permian Basin to hold its annual Roll and Read event. UTPB is inviting the public to come out for its annual First Five Permian Basin Roll and Read event. The free, family-friendly event will take place from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Saturday at Freedom Park. The event will include booths with activities and reading stations, as well as free books. The First Five Roll and Read event celebrates early literacy, physical activity, and healthy families. For more information about First Five Permian Basin, go to tinyurl.com/yznjvtxb. Warning about Megasterol. Dear Dr. Roach, in a recent column, you mentioned Megasterol as a drug to counter hot flashes associated with prostate cancer treatments. I was prescribed this medication, and as a result, I developed life-threatening blood clots from my right calf up to my lungs. I spent numerous days in intensive care while I received clot-busting drugs, and I am now on blood thinner medication, Eliquis, for life. The urologist no longer prescribes this medication because of my case, and the hematologist said that he doesn't prescribe Megasterol for this exact reason. Please add a warning about this drug to your column. Answer. I thank GK for writing. Megasterol is known to have the potential to stimulate prostate cancer, so I recommend against it unless it is used as a last resort. But GK is absolutely right. Since Megasterol has estrogen effects, it increases the risk of blood clots. Men with prostate cancer are already at a higher risk for blood clots, so the combination is particularly dangerous. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Daughter returns to nest, refuses to live in reality. Dear Abby, for Friday, March 31st. Dear Abby, my 28-year-old daughter moved back home when COVID hit. She works as an influencer and also has a part-time job as a content creator. She doesn't pay bills. My husband doesn't want her to pay rent, etc. I feel it's important for her to do so. She does help pay for her groceries and gas. She stays in her room day and night. She used to go out with friends, but now doesn't do anything. She says she has cyber friends. We have asked her to come out with us at times, but she refuses. Another problem is she hasn't gone to the doctor or dentist in a very long time. I talked with her about it, and she blamed me for not taking her. I offered to go with her, but she doesn't do anything about it. My husband doesn't think there is a problem, but I feel there is. I feel we have enabled her, although we didn't mean to. Should we be charging her rent? How do we get her to become more social? How do we get her to the right help so she can move forward in life? Concerned Mom in Rhode Island. Dear Concerned Mom, a step in the right direction would be for your husband to take his head out of the sand and admit that his daughter may have a problem. The next step would be to have a frank talk with her and tell her that if she is going to continue living with you, she must agree to have medical and dental checkups. Go with her so you can understand what is going on, because your daughter appears to have some emotional issues. Her world may be on the web, but unless she can find one on terra firma, expect her to be under your roof forever. Dear Abby, I've been in a relationship with my partner, we're both male, for more than 4 years. He argues nonstop about everything from politics to why the squirrel outside ran across the street. Daily I hear him complain about everything, from the news to the grocery list, laundry, you name it. A friend of mine will be in town this weekend. He invited my partner and me to a football game. When I shared this with my partner, he immediately declined, complained about the invite, and said he'd rather stay home. I've had it up to here with his negativity, and I have decided to end this relationship. I'm not happy with this, and I have decided that if my out-of-town friend wants me to start a new life with him, I would be all for it. I'd rather be happy and not have to deal with this. Life is too short. Your thoughts? Done with it in Colorado. If you are not happy with your partner, level with him about it. If counseling would improve things, see if he's willing to give it a try. If not, consult an attorney who specializes in family law and proceed with ending the union. A word of caution, however, and I cannot stress this too strongly, you implied that you would like to be romantically involved with the friend who invited you to that football game. In all caps, jumping into another relationship before you have recovered from this one would be a huge mistake. End of all caps. Give yourself time to detoxify. Meet people. Date around. You will have plenty of fun if you do, and less of a chance of another failed relationship.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.